What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Establish the Edge podcast. I'm your host, Pat Corain, and with me is my co-host, Mike Leone of EstablishTheRun.com. Mike, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. Pretty pumped to break down the, you know, the NFL draft and the impact on rookies. It's a fun time of year with dynasty rookie drafts going on, best ball being released. So this has a lot of applications.
Yeah, and one of these podcasts that I'm excited to do, because right before I hit record, we were like talking and we realized we were doing the podcast. So there's lots of good stuff for us to get into. My rookie ranks just published on Establish the Run. I went four rounds deep in Superflex, basically four rounds deep in PPR. There's just a couple of quarterbacks hanging off the end there. So both formats covered, and wanted to just kind of talk through some of the big takeaways, some of the big decision points. I guess there's one thing that's kind of interesting. I don't have a tier rank in these, but for the PPR ranks, you can kind of see where I see tiers. Like if I have all the quarterbacks ranked, you know, between a skill player and the next skill player, it's probably a tier break. But one tier situation I wanted to talk through with you, Mike, is Trevor Lawrence in Superflex. I did get a question on Twitter if there is still a tier break between him and Trey Lance. I think that there is, but I wanted to see what you think.
This is where I probably get a little bit too greedy, and I feel like it's like half a tier. Can I cop out and say half a tier? I mean, the thing you're paying for with Lawrence is certainty, right? Yep. I mean, it's one of the best quarterback prospects since Luck has been thrown around there. And, you know, it just really feels like you're getting through his entire rookie contract, you know, unless it goes really bad, you're probably getting 5 years, and
I think people are getting fired before he gets benched, or if he gets benched, you've gotten yourself fired.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, you know, he runs a little bit, so he doesn't have to be a dominant passer. You know, if he's an above average passer and runs a little bit, you know, he's going to be like top 15-ish QB. There's obviously a ceiling beyond that. I'm just saying like the floor is pretty good there. And in Superflex, that's pretty meaningful to be locked into. I have some teams with quarterbacks and it's like guys like Drew Lock, and you're like, this could be dead. This might be dead already, actually, with the Teddy Bridgewater. Like Drew Lock may never start a game again, you know, like, right. And you're not really having that with year three and Trevor Lawrence. And that messes you up if that happens to you, if you end up in the Drew Lock situation. Like you're in trouble if you don't have a stable of quarterbacks behind him. Like you can't get absolutely crushed at that position. So
because you paid so much to get into that position in the first place. Like Drew Lock was not cheap, you know, especially if you were trading for him after he had already had the job. Like if you're getting any of these guys with really high draft capital to begin with, you can't have the bottom fall out on you. It's a real problem.
Yeah. I mean, in startups, I did a couple of the FFP startups, and Lawrence is a late first rounder, mid-late first rounder in both of them. And, you know, Lance goes like round four, that was pre-NFL draft. I bet he goes earlier. Now I'm greedy in the sense that I think Lance, like, is a top 10 fantasy quarterback when he starts. I know a lot of people have thrown out that this hasn't been a fantasy friendly situation for quarterbacks. My major pushback against that is they've gotten insane efficiency from the quarterback position from guys who haven't played well. I mean, some of the highest yards per attempt quarterbacks the last 3 to 4 seasons are Jimmy Garoppolo and Nick Mullins. And, you know, my take is kind of, if any quarterback can be good real life there, then, you know, a quarterback who's actually talented can sort of push that to the next level. They probably throw a bit more than they have. And then the rushing upside for Lance is kind of nuts. And I think that's something you and I were talking, maybe it was with Ben Gretsch about, but I think like it's almost overlooked, like the ceiling on the rushing for Lance. Like, we kind of tend to group guys as like they all run, right? And then we like throw them in this nebulous group. But yeah. Lance is like, like game changing type of rusher potentially. So I think it's pretty close. I would trade back from one to two if I could get, you know, I don't know. What would you put the break even? Like if I had like an early second rounder, I would trade back from one to two, I think.
I don't think I would. I think I'd need something, but yeah, maybe.
And this is where like the league type matters though. Like if you're playing in a league where it's shallower, that early second maybe doesn't do a lot for you. If you're playing a league that's deeper and that guy's actually usable, even if he doesn't break out like in a huge way, you know, then I'm more prone to take something like that.
Maybe, you know, that's probably pretty fair. Given where some of this ADP is falling, like I probably want like my ninth or 10th player to make that move, but I think I might get my ninth or 10th player with an early second this year. So yeah, I think I probably would entertain doing that, which I think means that it is more like a half a tier than a full tier between the two.
I think it's possible you could get more. I mean, there are people that really, really want Lawrence. You know, so just depending on your league, like someone might really want him and you could make out pretty well. I think it's at least worth entertaining that if you're in the one-on-one.
Yeah, I think if you don't need the quarterback, I also think it's maybe worth taking him to the McCaffrey owner and saying, do you need anything else? Are you good with this? You know, because there's a lot of hype on Lawrence. And, you know, in a startup, McCaffrey's going to go ahead of Lawrence, but not by that many picks. Like you're kind of trading up from like the 108 or the 109 to like the 104 in a startup. So you're close already. And if you're on a team where having that running back would make a huge difference. I mean, that's something I'm actually thinking about in one league where I do have the 101 and we're already pretty set at quarterback. It's got the 101 through trade. But yeah, I think with Lance, you know, the point about rushing, 1,100 yards in 2019, I completely agree. I mean, he's got a really high ceiling there. And then the thing with Shanahan, I mean, you know, what he did in Atlanta is relevant. Like, his quarterback won the MVP. Like, yeah. It's not that we only have to look at his San Francisco sample here. I mean, he had full control of the offense in Atlanta. He's under a defensive head coach. So, yeah, I mean, the ceiling's, like, very high with Lance. Some people are pretty suspect of Lance, the prospect, and maybe the fact that he goes three isn't enough to get them on board. And as a result, you're seeing Fields ranked ahead of Lance, where I think that's defensible, but I do have a harder time doing that because, you know, we talked about Lawrence's trade value floor just being incredibly high. Like you're going to be able to sell him for years. Lance, I feel pretty similar about the idea that I'm unable to move Trey Lance next offseason seems really hard to imagine. But Justin Fields, not that I couldn't move him, but the fact that I might have to sell him at kind of a discount, I think is fairly plausible, especially because he is going to be, I think, thrown right out there. I don't have full faith in the Chicago coaching staff. And if he doesn't play well, they're probably getting fired. So now I've got a new coaching staff coming in year two. He's coming off a kind of a bad enough season to get them fired. It could be a situation where people are starting to feel uneasy already after year one. That's obviously a downside case that I'm painting. I think his ceiling is extremely high. I think his rushing is maybe a bit better than I was giving it credit for previously, just because he's such a good athlete. And in a system where they want him to run a little bit more, maybe he can actually add some real value there. Now, I don't think it's to the Lance extent, but maybe it's closer than like, maybe I think he's probably a better rusher than Lawrence, right? So
yeah,
there's probably a meaningful difference there.
So
but the floor just has me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I think, and again, it's kind of like just coming down to tiebreakers because it's two really strong options. I think it's like 60-40, but I'm with you. I think it's in favor of Lance. For a few reasons, I think he has a few tiebreakers go his way. One, this, you know, the supporting cast around him, Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, you know, you look at the Bears and it's Allen Robinson, right? Like pretty big difference. And we've already talked about Shanahan there. So I think right off the bat, that helps. Two, I think like the rushing upside's a little bit higher. Four, Lance. And then three, kind of like the coaching stuff that you mentioned. The tiebreaker that would be in Fields' corner is, I guess, a little bit of safety in terms of like, we know he's an accurate quarterback. And that's one of the more important traits that translates to the NFL. He produced, you know, his production in college was at the top level of college for a couple of seasons, whereas Lance, you know, didn't even play last year. But I think people might overrate the idea that Fields is going to start way earlier than Lance. Like, all these guys are going to start early. And I'm not going to let a few games at the beginning of the season dictate what I do. Also, I had a really interesting quote. I think it came from Schefter, but, you know, people definitely check me on that, that the Niners thought Lance was more ready to play this year than Mac Jones, which is interesting because from the outside view, I think everyone assumed the exact opposite. Like, oh, maybe they take Mac Jones because they want him to play right away. So it's interesting to hear them say that about Trey Lance. I don't think it'll be long. I think as long as he's good, he plays right away, and then you get into some correlation there early. But
with the press conference after, I mean, they were Shanahan was saying, like, you know, my comments about Jimmy could be dead on Sunday or whatever was clearly like I put that wrong. But then he went on to say, like, you know, we really want him around. I don't think they're going to trade him. But on the other hand, he was also talking about how, you know, if Trey Lance pushes Jimmy Garoppolo for the starting job, like, that's great. Like, they're clearly hoping he comes in and takes the starting job from Garoppolo. Maybe he doesn't because he is a fairly raw quarterback prospect, but he's making starts in 2021. He might make a lot of starts in 2021.
And I also found it interesting that I don't know if this is true. This is trying to read the tea leaves a little bit, but it maybe feels like there was more than just the Niners that had Lance ahead of Fields.
I think Denver did.
Some people are speculating that, you know, part of the reason Denver traded for Teddy was because they knew Lance would be off the board. I have no idea if that's true, but if there's even like a chance that's true, like the gap they must have had between the two must have been meaningful to say we're going to take Lance at nine and we're not even going to take Fields, like,
right,
unless they have something worked out with Green Bay or whatever. But I don't know. It just seemed, and then like with the Atlanta stuff, you know, with them kind of being up in the air until the end, and then it was like, okay, they're taking Pitts, they're not going to go quarterback. Like, would they have to? I don't know. That's just purely speculation, but it is interesting to me that the Niners, you know, they trade up to three, they get Lance, and it seemed like some teams that could have used quarterbacks passed on Fields. I'm not worried about Fields, but I'm just trying not to get too cute with it. You know, one guy we think has more rushing upside, one guy is in a better spot, and one guy got drafted earlier.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, in general, my philosophy on quarterbacks is that we have a pretty bad track record of trying to get cute. Every time we get cute, it kind of blows up in our face. Guys that I think were pretty exciting from a production profile perspective, like Marcus Mariota, have really not worked out. Guys that we were convinced were terrible draft picks, like Josh Allen. There was not much excitement about Justin Herbert. Those have been excellent picks. Then you've got guys like Daniel Jones and Blake Bortles, who we were pretty sure were god-awful picks, but had really nice trade windows at one point in these super flex leagues. So my thing is, like, you know, is a franchise committed to this guy? Because you do end up with, you know, your Haskins, your Josh Rosens. They quickly wash out. But I think the Bears are committed to Justin Fields. So I do include him. Like, I don't think you should get too cute and start passing on Justin Fields. But at the same time, I don't want to put too much of my own personal quarterback evaluation thumb on the scale here, because both these guys have the rushing upside we want. And as you mentioned, the tiebreakers kind of go to Lance here. So yeah, I don't mind people having Fields ahead of them, but that's why I have Lance ahead.
Yeah. So that's like tier one, or I guess if you want to call it tiers one and two, if you have Lawrence ahead, then it feels like to me this next tier is definitely, you know, Chase, Wilson, Pitts. This is again Superflex tight end premium. I would include Najee in that tier. It's very interesting because the way that the people I talk to most play fantasy is they devalue running back a little bit, and I think for very good reasons, but it's definitely going to be interesting that I think a lot of more casual ranks will have Najee, you know, as high as one, maybe not in super flex, but like, I think they'll have them clearly in that first tier and the first nine quarterback rank.
Yeah, I have them two in my PPR rank. So I'm not, I mean, I have Chase ahead of them, which I think Chase is an incredible wide receiver prospect. Najee is a decent running back prospect in an incredible situation. And I just want the incredible wide receiver prospect who's also in an incredible situation, by the way, with better draft capital. So yeah, I think, but I'm not trying to get too cute here with Najee either. Part of me, you know, obviously wants to put ETN ahead of him because ETN's the better running back prospect. I just got burned last year by playing the situation game by having CEH over Jonathan Taylor, who I had Jonathan Taylor ranked super high pre-draft, brought him down some, then bumped CEH up a lot. That obviously hurt. So, you know, part of me wants to be like, see, that's why you just do what the prospect profile says. But, you know, come on. I mean, Pittsburgh, they're going to feed this guy. He's going to be a three down guy. ETN, we're not sure exactly how it's going to, you know, what his role is going to be. And ETN's not a Jonathan Taylor level prospect. He's just, I think, a better prospect than Najee Harris. I have ETN as kind of a slightly worse prospect than Dalvin Cook and Joe Mixon. He's a good, I would say a very good running back prospect, but he's not like a slam dunk. And the situation is a little shaky. Certainly not the incredible landing spot that Harris got.
So you, I mean, you know, obviously know the prospects better than me. Is the concern with ETN just like the workhorse role potential? That's like the flag?
Yeah, I think the flag coming in was that he didn't profile as a true workhorse. Very elusive, great yards per route run, but wasn't getting a ton of work even in college. And so, and everyone, all the film guys are going, you know, this could be kind of like a change of pace guy in a worst case scenario. And, you know, he's getting comps to like CJ Spiller and that type of running back. So immediately, you know, you're like, oh God, like, is he Felix Jones? You know, how bad could this be? But so that's kind of the downside. And then he goes to a team that's already got a really strong, you know, running back in James Robinson. They're going to probably play Carlos Hyde. I still think it'll work out like a DeAndre Swift situation from last year. I'm still pretty bullish on ETN.
Yeah.
But I do kind of want to temper that bullishness with just the reality of the situation. Whereas Harris, I mean, Harris does not profile as elite at really anything at the NFL level, but he profiles as probably good enough at everything at the NFL level if he lands in the right situation. And my God, is this the right situation? I mean, there's no one who can challenge him for anything here. I mean, Benny Snell's not taking goal line carries from Najee Harris, and Anthony McFarland's not taking receiving work from Najee Harris. So if the offense doesn't crater, he's going to be really productive. I went back and like looked at, you know, what did TJ Yeldon do as a rookie? TJ Yeldon had 13 points per game as a rookie because he was drafted to be a workhorse, and he was used as a workhorse for one really gross year. You know, so like even TJ Yeldon, you could have gotten out of, you know, he was semi-productive as a rookie. I don't, you know, I think Harris has to be pretty, pretty bad to even do that. He's probably getting you 16, 17 points a game this year. You're not going to have any trouble selling him in the offseason. I'm trying not to overthink Najee Harris.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I'm curious if you think this tier then is, I guess, at what point do you draft for need versus the prospect you like better? Because it feels to me like these guys are all somewhat in a tier, and you've got a wide receiver, a quarterback, a tight end, and a running back. And at what point do you consider, you know, positional needs versus the prospect you like most? Like, is there a world where you would take Najee over Chase based on how you're structured, or
no,
the receiver? But no.
No, I think Chase is in his own tier in PPR.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like you've got, I don't know, it's like he's like an Amari Cooper level prospect in a much better situation, right? Because we had Derek Carr thrown to Amari Cooper. We've got the guy who made him a superstar at the college level now throwing to Ja'Marr Chase. And I think Najee Harris is kind of an Eddie Lacy level prospect or level situation. Like he's going to probably give you very similar to what Lacy did. And he's got upside for what James Conner did a few years ago, of like 20 plus points per game. But I struggle to see how he does it multiple seasons given Roethlisberger clearly in decline, given no plan at quarterback, given the state of the offensive line. So to pass on one of the best wide receiver prospects in years in a great situation for a running back who's going to be very, very usable, but probably not going to change your dynasty team. I'm not into it.
Yeah. This is where my greed like gets the best of me. I have the 104 in a couple leagues where I'm pretty sure the top three quarterbacks are going to go. And because I generally build my team so wide receiver heavy in the startup, I'm like, do I take Chase? Do I want to drop down? And then the allure with Kyle Pitts is it's easy to talk yourself and to paint a narrative with Kyle Pitts. And it's very dangerous when you start painting narratives. I know everyone jokes like you have to tell a story, but it can be very dangerous because that's like how biases creep in. And then that's how like you dismiss probabilistic thinking and you start thinking something's a certainty. I'm going to do that anyways, just because it's fun. But the narrative with Pitts, I mean, is in a tight end premium league is that like with some of these older tight ends that are very good, like started washing out, like he just could have like this distinctly unique advantage at the position for years. That is just like, if he hits, like if he's like Kelsey level production at his age, I mean, he's a round one startup pick in tight end premium for years.
You're right. He's got that upside. It's tough. I hate being like the Pitts bear. I've made myself the Pitts bear, and I'm like, why don't I just go where everyone else is ranking Pitts and put him there so I don't have to be the Pitts bear? But like, I have, so in Superflex, I have Zach Wilson ahead of him, which no one likes. But Zach Wilson was the number two pick. A franchise is fully committed to this guy. He's in the Shanahan system. LaFleur is a Shanahan guy. He's bringing over the same system. He's going to roll out. He's going to get a lot of play action. He profiles as like a Ryan Tannehill type rusher. He's got a big arm. I mean, this guy could put up a lot of points at the quarterback position, and he's very, very safe. So I just don't really see passing on him is that smart. And so I just need like a locked in prospect to do it. I have Ja'Marr Chase ahead of him. I've talked about how high I'm on Chase. Pitts, yes, he's a locked in tight end prospect, but we just have such a low correlation between the elite tight ends and what they look like as prospects, and then other elite tight ends not becoming elite prospects. I mean, OJ Howard is actually good tight end, but he never became a fantasy asset. There's a bunch of other guys like Njoku. They've washed out. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Pitts, but the outcome that you need for Pitts is a very low probability outcome because there are so few elite tight ends. Like the point you're making about, you know, what if he's the next Travis Kelce because there's no Travis Kelces? Well, that should also factor into our thinking of him becoming Travis Kelce in the first place.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
There really aren't very many of these guys. And like Kittle becomes that guy. Well, he partly became that guy because the system is going to run through the tight end a lot more than most other systems. Waller ends up on a spot where there's like no wide receivers. He quickly becomes the focal point of that offense. I don't think that Pitts is going to become the focal point of that offense, even if Julio Jones is traded. I think it's still Calvin Ridley. I think Pitts can be quite productive for sure, but him becoming a George Kittle or Travis Kelce level producer is a still, even for Pitts, not a high probability outcome. Passing on a quarterback is tough. And then a quarterback with mobility. And then in PPR, I have him seventh, you know, so non-tight end premium, I have him seventh. I think people are even more tilted by that. We can get into that a little bit more as we go through the guys I have ahead of them, which we haven't.
Yeah. I think like part of like I probably have way too wide of a gap on Pitts between tight end premium and non, but like there's just like something in my head that's like he could break tight end premium versus like non. I'm just like, okay, he could be really good, but like I'm not gonna kill myself if I like miss out on
right,
that. Right. The one thing I think is a little different with Pitts is just like he's walking into such a phenomenal situation where guys like Hayden Hurst and Austin Hooper were like viable. So like I feel like he hits it at a great time where like Ridley takes pressure off, Julio's there, but like and he's still good, but he's like not the focal point anymore. And right. they didn't draft a running back, or they draft JV and Hawkins super, like they're going to throw nonstop, we think.
Yeah.
Like, right. So I actually have Pitts in our underdog rankings as T5, which is aggressive.
It's still
like,
behind market though, isn't it?
He's like, it's in line with market right okay. now. I think on FFPC, people have lost their minds and he's
that's
gone.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. Underdog, like it's still like, I think it's Andrews and then like the clear top three ahead of him. But like,
he's going
like
to start going ahead of Andrews.
Yeah. And I had a spot where I was like, do I take Andrews or Pitts? And I took Andrews. But like, I think so that's a little different, but to your Wilson point, I think we're both higher on Wilson. Just again, just that, like, let's not get too cute at quarterback. I think too, looking at Wilson's skills,
are you with me on Wilson ahead of Pitts? Or are you with the crowd?
I would draft on need. I mean, that's boring. Okay. I feel like I might take Pitts ahead of Wilson for like, yeah, not
all right.
good, for not here like good reasons, not even like good reasons. Just like, I think it's more fun.
It is more fun. It's definitely more fun.
But I feel like, again, that's my struggle too. Like, I have another league where I'm at 104 and I like kind of need a quarterback and I'm like, do I take Wilson? And it is a good draft though, I think, where you can trade into spots where I know there's someone at 107 in this league where I have the 104 and might take Wilson who like wants to trade out of 107 if Wilson's the guy that's left over. You know, like that's how people are thinking with Wilson.
Yeah.
So like there might be some opportunities to, you know, if you're like in a spot where like you could use the quarterback, but like it's not an absolute must need, I could see trading down from 104 a few spots and feeling pretty good about getting Wilson. And then if you get sniped, like, you know, you can either Pitts or Chase hopefully falls to you.
Yeah. And by all means, you don't have to like literally draft in order of these ranks because the market has a lot to say here. So you know, trade down. Like if you agree with me on this at all, you can trade down off of that pick and get, you know, some extra capital, which will, you know, make it hurt a little less if I end up being wrong about this. I mean, Pitts, God, his ceiling is incredible. Like I don't want to discount it. It's incredible. And to your point, he could be a first round startup pick for years. He could give you a huge positional advantage, all of it. But
yeah, he could also, you know, catch 40 balls a year for 600 yards and,
yeah, he could be fine.
That'd be pretty normal. That wouldn't be like a weird thing if that happened.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it'd be like a normal outcome for him. Yeah, because he's a tight end. I mean, and I was talking to Davis about this. Like, you know, wasn't that he
I have to laugh because like I'm just trying to envision Davis trying to be rational about someone like can't. Kyle Pitts, and it's just like.
He can't. Yeah, he was just like, well, he'd be an incredible wide receiver prospect, which he would, by the way. He would be an incredible wide receiver prospect, but you know, he didn't have the like career production and just like bulletproof wide receiver profile. It's not like he's truly a bulletproof wide receiver prospect who happens to play tight end. He's an incredible tight end prospect because he would have been a very good wide receiver prospect, but not like a slam dunk. So that's kind of where, as we get to the PPR rankings, where I have Bateman and Waddle ahead of him and Javonte Williams ahead of him. That's why these guys, Bateman, Waddle, both of them are very, very strong wide receiver prospects. They have first round draft capital. I think Bateman with the first round draft capital, he looks a lot like DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley to me coming in. He is at a position where we do want to put a lot of emphasis on the prospect profiles coming in, where we actually have a strong correlation between these guys' profiles and their outcomes, and where you go look at previous wide receiver classes, and there is a ton of broken down wide receivers on the side of the road, where if you don't want to get too cute with landing spot versus actually betting on the guys who look like they're going to be good, because it burns you in a big way. You know, you see the Josh Doctsons and the Kevin Whites and, you know, on and on. And so I want to first and foremost bet on the wide receivers who look like they're going to be studs and then kind of figure it out from there. That's like where I'm putting a lot of my emphasis. And the way I do wide receiver evaluation is that I don't do detailed film analysis. So that draft capital is basically me tailing the Ravens scouting department on film, on character, on team fit, on all that stuff. And then I'm adding career production, broke out early, declared early, efficient, like all of those things that I also care about that I think maybe the NFL tends to underweight in general. Bateman checks all those boxes. So just looks like a slam dunk prospect to me. Obviously, I wouldn't have handpicked the Ravens landing spot for him, but I'm still really, really into Bateman. And then Waddle, I think, you know, everyone's pretty into Waddle, hyper, hyper efficient. The production wasn't quite there, but we can understand in context why that was the case. The draft capital, I think the landing spot's pretty good for him. So I think I'm probably going to be, you know, on Pitts Bear Island here to have him behind these two wide receivers, but I feel really good about both these wide receivers. Where are you at with that decision, Mike?
Yeah, I think I'd probably have Waddle ahead of Pitts, and then Pitts, and then Bateman. Where, and again, like I'm working on seasonal projections, and it's tough for me to remove the landing spot bias completely. Even though it's like one of those things where like I understand like I should be removing it, but it's hard for me to do. You know, when I'm working on projections, and you've just got so only so many pass attempts to go around for Baltimore, you've got Pitts stepping into Atlanta, and I'm like, I take Pitts. And I am curious, one point I just want to make, like, it's really interesting how these rookie drafts are so different each year. Like this year, there's this clear top eight or so, and there's even tiers within that. Last year was so deep, like almost wrapping around into early round two. And this year, it seems like the tier drop off is greater, both after the top eight, but then even after you get through a few guys, at least to me, it feels like.
I don't see a huge tier drop between.
I mean, we were taking like.
You're talking PPR, or you're talking.
Like super flex tight end premium. Like we were talking, I mean, we were like T Higgins and Claypool were going like mid late two last year. I mean, some of that's hindsight bias, but
Bateman profiles is a better prospect than Rager and Justin Jefferson. Like he profiles as a better prospect than CeeDee Lamb. I mean, his career production,
I guess maybe the drop offs after that, like after those, but yeah. I guess like the more like maybe it's more like mid late second round is where the drop off is. Or maybe now, I'm just not respecting some of these receivers enough.
I should say on paper, because CeeDee Lamb was tied to Dak and Bateman. So we're, you know, in these two classes, I've probably taken CeeDee first, but I would have taken Bateman over Jerry Jeudy. I think I would have taken him over Rager, and I would have taken him over Justin Jefferson. So that's kind of what fits in the class for me.
Curious though that, okay, so you don't want to overrate landing spot. Then your write-up with Devonta Smith is somewhat negative, based specifically on how Philadelphia uses receivers. And I don't know, I'm just kind of curious there. I know there's like a wide range of opinions on Devonta Smith. I've seen people very down on him because of the weight and playing the 4 years. I've seen, I think RotoViz is really high on him because of their age adjusted production. They think's amazing. Like they have him like meaningfully ahead of Waddle, which I don't agree with, but it's like enough to like, for me to put that in the draft capital to kind of have it Waddle, Smith, and then Bateman. So just kind of curious your take on Devonta Smith.
Yeah. My take on him is that like his career production was not where you want it to be for a 4 year player, but we understand, you know, the context there. He's with these, he's with Jeudy, he's with Ruggs, he's with Waddle for three of his years. Then he basically has the whole thing to himself with Waddle getting hurt and has a Heisman winning year. So you want to be flexible on that. He also does have this weight red flag. He was pretty efficient throughout his entire career. So I think he's a good prospect. But I don't think he's a Bateman level prospect. I don't think he's a Waddle level prospect. I think he's a, you know, like if he went in the second round, you know, I'd be kind of like, I think I'd have him behind Terrace Marshall. I'd have him behind both the Moores. You know, I wouldn't be that excited about him if he had gone second round. It's that first round draft capital where, you know, the film guys clearly think he can play that helps me overcome some of the production red flags and the weight red flag, but I still view him as just not as good a bet to actually be a good NFL player as Bateman and Waddle. And then, yeah, it's like the situation stuff is also not helping. So whereas like with Bateman, I'm just like, God damn, he looks like a good prospect. Like the first round draft capital, I wasn't even sure was coming. With Smith, I knew the first round draft capital was coming. And now it's a little bit more easy, I guess, to get disappointed with the situation. But I did mention the situation in the write-up, but I would say primarily what's driving my rank of him is that I don't view him as strong of a prospect situation independent as Bateman and Waddle.
And something you said to me too, that's probably worth relaying to the listeners. The first round draft capital matters, but I believe you said that the difference between going 10th and 27th isn't.
There hasn't really been that big of a difference. You know, you see like some guys like N'Keal Harry who get picked 32 and bust. You know, that'll happen, but you also have busts really at the high end of the draft. You've got your Tavon Austins and stuff. So just it hasn't been historically something that has made a ton of difference. And I think, you know, generally you've got stronger franchises drafting at the back end of the first round. And it's every team's first pick. You know, every team gets one guy they think is, you know, their top guy to take. So, yeah, I think most teams would have taken Devonta Smith over Rashad Bateman. That counts for something, but it's not historically been enough to overcome, I think, some of this other stuff. So both these guys are first round caliber talents. I think that's the most important thing to remember. If you're breaking a true tie, sure, break it in favor of the draft position. But to me, the, you know, getting drafted 10th versus getting drafted in the 20s is not something I want to get too caught up in.
So then Javonte Williams, Mac Jones, you have ranked 11, 12 in Superflex. I think that's about right. Javonte, I don't know. He ends up in an okay spot. Like there's clearly a back ahead of him to start, but it's not someone that we're too afraid of. It's Melvin Gordon. He's a free agent next year. Could easily see Javonte. You know, they kind of split touches the last couple of seasons anyways. They gave Gordon a little bit higher share when they had him last year, and they didn't use Lindsay quite as much, but I think Javonte carves out a decent role to start. And then, you know, it's pretty much the clear starter going into the next season. It's always tough with running backs because if you're spending like pretty good rookie capital, I feel like with running backs, you really do want some pretty immediate production just because you never know what's going to happen at that position. It can fall off so quickly. I say that, and then last year, like five guys hit all at the end of the season and look like great picks going into this year. So it's a little bit weird.
Real quick, I just want to circle back because I brought up the guys I have as the top prospects going back to 2007. Calvin Johnson was drafted second. Hakeem Nicks was drafted 29th. Dez Bryant was drafted 24th, Julio Jones 6th, DeAndre Hopkins 27th, Odell Beckham 12th, Amari Cooper 4th, DJ Moore 24th, Calvin Ridley 26th, Ja'Marr Chase 5th. So it's like, you know, I don't see like a ton of like the 20s do not seem like a death knell there. You've got Nicks, Bryant, Hopkins, Moore, Ridley all in the 20s. So that's kind of where I'm going to Rashad Bateman and saying, you know, 27th is just fine with me. But yeah, back to Javonte Williams. I think one thing I'm a little bit concerned with Javonte Williams is how he gets on the field, because I think he gets on the field first as a rusher. I think Melvin Gordon's kind of keeping some of his work. It's probably in the receiving game. We have Javonte Williams with a profile of being a good pass catcher, but not the primary pass catcher on his college team. And so kind of easy enough to envision him in the same type of role at the NFL to start. And if that's the case, then he's not going to be a very strong fantasy asset out of the gate. He might be fine, but he's not going to be great. Maybe like 11, 12 points per game if things go decent. And then you don't necessarily know that Melvin Gordon walks at the end of the year. He is a free agent, but I imagine if you're Melvin Gordon and you're offered like a cheap one-year deal, you're going to take it. And then they could bring in someone else, you know? So, and we don't have quarterback figured out there. Maybe Locke's just good enough to have them miss out on the top quarterbacks next year. So just like enough uncertainty there that I have Javonte Williams, which I think turns out to be quite a bit lower than consensus. I didn't necessarily think I'd be lower than consensus on him with PPR rank of sixth and Superflex rank of 11th. People, I think after Trey Sermon went in the third round, I was hearing some takes that he might go ahead of Williams, but then Williams' stock seems to have recovered pretty quickly in the rankings.
And yeah, comparing Williams to the backs that, you know, ended up going later in the super flex first round last year, like he's not as good of a prospect as like Akers and Swift, right?
No. I would say he's probably as good a prospect as Akers. He's a similar prospect to Akers, mm-hmm. where he's not like a star receiver, but he can do it. And he's really shifty and he makes a lot of people miss, broke the career elusive rating record, obviously. So does he have the next gear and is he going to be on a team that commits to him as a workhorse? That's kind of the questions.
Yeah, Akers was sort of in the perfect spot for that. And then Mac Jones in this range, this is where it's tough. I've seen a lot of drafts where Mac Jones goes like immediately after Zach Wilson. And there's part of me that's like, that's way too close. Like Zach Wilson's much better than Mac Jones, both in terms of starting day one, you know, draft capital invested, and like some upside with the legs. But at the same time, if you need a quarterback, like, Mac Jones is going to be playing games pretty soon, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Mac Jones was a tough rank because, you know, we've already talked about all the don't get too cute stuff, but he also doesn't run. So, like, you know, he really does need to be a very good passer to ultimately end up being a strong fantasy asset. I don't fault anyone for taking Mac Jones right after Wilson. I think that's fine. I'd rather take some shots on guys who I think are really strong prospects ahead of him. I think Bateman, Waddle, Williams, Etienne, Harris, all between, and Pitts, in between Wilson and Jones. I think all of those guys are really strong prospects.
Yeah, Mac is like you're hoping to have the QB20 for 5 years, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, maybe he gets to... You know, I could see him having like a QB6 season for sure. I mean, we got like high-end seasons out of Andy Dalton. Like, didn't we get a high-end season?
Games changed, Pat. We got too many runners now.
You're right. Too many runners. Yeah, you're right. Maybe QB6 is the wrong way to put it.
But like QB10, like he could get up to QB10 if he passes. I mean, like we saw Brady there last year. You know, we've seen Matt Ryan with some huge seasons. So,
yeah. But like, I mean, he could have very, very usable fantasy seasons for you. Even if he ends up being kind of whatever. I guess he like Baker.
Yeah.
Although I think Baker's maybe a little bit more mobile, but
yeah. He doesn't really like rack up any rushing stats though.
He could end up being better than Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins is still pretty solid in Superflex. Like you're very happy if you have Kirk Cousins in Superflex. Yep. He's locked in.
I traded
starter spots.
I don't know if it was last year or the year before, you know, traded a future first round pick for Kirk Cousins because we needed a quarterback in Superflex. So that's the liquidity that you talk about at the quarterback market. Like even if they're not difference makers at the position, if they're just there and going to remain there for a couple of years.
And just so people don't think I'm insane, Andy Dalton had 22.3 points per game in 2013 in a 16 game season, 22.1 in 2015 in a 13 game season, 2018 and 2019 is both above 19 points per game. So like if you also have that with job security, it's not nothing.
Yeah, that is, I'm probably a little too hard on these guys. I'm like, I get kind of like the all or nothing. Like he's got upside or down. Like I get a little too binary sometimes with these guys.
Well, I do think you want to be that way in one quarterback. You know, I have him ranked 35th in one quarterback. because
yeah, what's the point?
What's the point? You do need to swing for the fences in one quarterback, but in Superflex, it's a different game. You got to have that starter. So the high floor really comes in, and you know, you're competing against everyone else's QB2. So, you know, the bar's a little lower in terms of the production you need.
Okay. So then we get into this next range, which is pretty receiver heavy. Terrace Marshall, Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, Diami Brown is like your next set of wide receivers. I thought that Terrace Marshall, he went round two, right? So it wasn't
round two.
So it wasn't that. We were worried maybe he drops a little bit because of the medicals. And, you know, he didn't go end of round one like what some people thought he might. But round two is still pretty solid. I love, not to overrate the situation, but it's one of those spots where you come in and you've got an immediate opportunity at a role for a team that uses three wide receivers. I mean, you basically got to beat out David Moore. And then you've got Robbie Anderson potentially leaving after a year. So, like, you've got the upside to, like, really grow into it. It's a team that I think could, you know, they supported a lot of fantasy assets last year with Teddy Bridgewater back there. Yeah. You know, if Darnold does, I know people don't like Darnold, but it's not like he has to be that good to support a few guys fantasy wise in this offense.
Yeah. And with Anderson maybe gone, you could be looking at kind of a T Higgins level rise in year two. Obviously the Higgins hype a little bit down now that they drafted Chase, but if this team gets a top five draft pick, they're using it on a quarterback, not an elite wide receiver prospect. So easy to see the opportunity opening up even more in 2022. This was actually, I just did a podcast with Davis and he talked me into raising my Marshall rank. I had originally had him behind both the Moores when these came out. I think a little bit probably overly disappointed that he didn't go in round one and that he slipped a little bit even in round two. But, you know, Davis is making the point that if the medical red flags are the reason, that Joe Brady probably has a pretty good read on how serious those medical issues are with his LSU connections. So pretty nice stamp of approval. Got the coach wide receiver shower narrative. I think Marshall also just a very strong ceiling prospect. Definitely boom bust, but the boom could be really, really big. And so I did move him ahead of the Moores because harder for me to see like either of these guys becoming top 10 fantasy wide receivers. I think it's possible, but it's just a little thinner given their size. And, you know, Rondale Moore lands in a perfect situation, one where he is probably going to be a full-time slot receiver, but that might also mean being a full-time player. There's very few teams where that's the case. He lands on one of them and he lands in a spot where maybe they use him deep a little bit out of the slot, which is pretty nice. I think on a lot of teams, he would have been pigeonholed as kind of this hybrid running back thing, and it would have been really gross. This is a really, really nice landing spot for Rondale. And then Elijah, it looks a little bit gross right now, but I think Jameson Crowder might be gone to start the year. They openly talked about getting rid of him before the draft. They're obviously really excited about Moore, took him in the early second. So I could see his opportunity increasing. And God, if he was like 190 pounds, I would really, really like him. He's 178, so it's harder to get excited. But if he can play on the outside a little bit in addition to the slot, then he does have a pretty decent fantasy ceiling. I would avoid, you know, getting too low on Elijah Moore as a low floor guy, because I do think he has some ceiling. I also say, so Diami Brown was the next guy after this. Brown is a dude who I was a little bit lukewarm on, but he landed in, you know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's a slow deep threat. Like, is there a better landing spot in all of the NFL for a slow deep threat than to play with Ryan Fitzpatrick? It's perfect. So I think Diami Brown could be like really nice. Well, we saw last year from Terry McLaurin that he was not being pigeonholed as a deep threat. He was being used as kind of an alpha wide receiver with like a more normal ADOT than what he had previously had. Like where, you know, his ADOT had been like 14 prior to that, clear out guy. I think they're probably going to use Diami as the clear out guy, even though he's not that fast, because that's what he excelled in school. And Fitzpatrick loves that guy, the guy that gets downfield and he can throw jump balls to. And then McLaurin can operate as kind of the alpha. And you also have Curtis Samuel, who's a field stretcher with actual speed and can play out of the slot. So it could be a really, really fun Washington offense. I think Dyami Brown is a good addition for Fitzpatrick and for, you know, any Washington shares that you have. I think he's probably good for McLaurin because it keeps McLaurin in the more kind of classic, of the three guys, he's probably the possession wide receiver, which is maybe a little bit weird to think about with McLaurin's deep speed and ability. But I do think he's going to get more of the intermediate stuff than Brown. So all in all, I just love this landing spot. And Brown was a big riser for me. And just behind these other wide receivers, I probably a little mini tier break between them and Brown, but I like Brown a lot. And then after this is where I have Trey Sermon, who I assume people are going to be a lot more hyped on than 13th in PPR and 18th in Superflex tight end premium, but he's just still a low floor prospect with the third round draft capital. I don't necessarily view him as like a lock to have immediate value. I think he definitely could, but I don't think it's a lock. We've seen guys that we got excited about, like Joe Williams, Jamichael Hasty, Jamichael Hasty was a UDFA, but Joe Williams, I believe, was a third or fourth round pick, immediately washes out. So, you know, it's not like he's guaranteed four volume. Definitely had some real flashes in college, but there's some major red flags on his resume as well. It's not like he was a second round pick. Like with Javonte, they traded up for him in the second round. Here he's a third round guy. So I think there's a fairly big distinction between those two guys.
Yeah, I was pretty excited with the Trey Sermon landing spot. I do think he's likely to get overhyped, as you said, but you're kind of like Mostert, where who's had a ton of success in this role, not necessarily the fastest guy, but like gets up to speed quickly. If you look at like on Player Profiler, their burst scores, Mostert's 96th percentile, which is actually better than Sermon's, but Sermon's 81st percentile in burst score, even though his like speed score is really subpar, 31st percentile. And in this running game in San Francisco, those guys that get up to speed quick seem to have a decent amount of success. And it's hard to really peg the upside here. We've seen at times the past couple years, guys have like really high weekly ceilings for San Francisco. We've seen Jeff Wilson have huge games. We had a playoff run where Tevin Coleman scored four touchdowns one week and then Mostert did it the next week. So like the weekly ceilings kind of get you excited, but then you also know this is kind of like a Baltimore style rushing attack where it's going to be hyper efficient, but these guys aren't going to catch a ton of balls and they're going to be spread out in terms of their touches. It's going to be split. So I'm torn on Sermon. I do like it just because I feel like, I just have a lot of faith in this system that it's probably going to churn out some production for you and help the floor. And it might be a little bit of an erratic journey, but I think you're going to get some decent spike weeks out of Sermon.
Yeah, and if you're playing the trade value game, then I probably do have Sermon too low because, you know, I'm glad you mentioned Baltimore. That's not only is this system kind of similar in the first place, but they're just moving a lot more to it now with the Trey Lance pick, right? You're going to get even less running back reception volume than even before. And that's, you know, obviously not what we want, but it could be maybe even more efficient on the ground. And if Sermon pops and looks really good, like he doesn't even have to score that many points, but just looks like he's got that burst, then you could see him getting drafted pretty close to where J.K. Dobbins is getting drafted now. So, you know, taking him over Dyami Brown, I think most people are going to feel pretty comfortable doing that because they're like, you know, he's probably not going to have no value as a running back tied to Shanahan. Both these guys, Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson are both free agents in 2022. So he could look like the primary rusher. There could be a really nice sell window on him. You don't even have to ride that out through the draft and free agency if you don't want. Could like sell him, in the early offseason. So maybe I should move up Sermon a little bit just based on the trade value alone.
Yeah. Like if he scores 8 touchdowns in an offense that's good, maybe like 6 to 8 touchdowns, averages like 5 yards a carry, doesn't get a ton of carries. Like people are always talking themselves into like, oh, what if he gets the role next year? I mean, that's what we're seeing with Dobbins. It's like,
yep.
Dobbins is going round two in redraft, and it's just kind of nuts to me. But like, that's what they're, they see the efficiency, and they're just like, what if it's all Dobbins? And I'm also probably just admittedly a little irrationally high on like how good San Francisco's offense could be if Trey Lance is good. I think they could be just outstanding. And that was, I think that's one of the things I said to Ben Gretsch when we were talking Fields versus Lance, but like, I could see the Niners outscoring the Bears by like 10 points per game. Like, I wouldn't be stunned to see that happen. That's obviously a huge window. That's a bull case. But Michael Carter, Ramondre Stevenson are the next two backs you have. Carter, not the best draft capital, as you put, near perfect landing spot in terms of opportunity for outside of Najee Harris. In terms of pure opportunity, you know, Carter might be the best out of the rookie backs.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one there. And this is a system that uses cheap running backs, you know, quick running backs. He can catch. I mean, Michael Carter could be a star. I don't think he's a great prospect, but he's not a bad prospect. And again, like we, I think there's like this weird lag happening with the Jets. The Jets are running the Shanahan system. They're not under Gase. Like, we should be somewhat excited about this offense. Like, because they hired a defensive coordinator as the head coach, I think that people are maybe worried about, you know, how aggressive they're going to be, how run heavy they might be or whatever. But they bring in LaFleur from the Shanahan offensive tree. So this is exactly the type of situation we want a running back to be in, with a pretty barren depth chart. Enough draft capital where there's really not much doubt he's going to make the team, and an all-around skill set. I wasn't really that excited about Michael Carter pre-draft, but I'm definitely excited about him now. Ramondre Stevenson, I'm assuming, like, after looking at Davis's ranks and not really hearing much buzz about him, this rank might seem like absurdly aggressive to have him 18th overall in PPR, 20th in Superflex tight end premium, but he's a guy that I think immediately slots in as the new Rex Burkhead.
Yeah, that's a great comp.
You know, he can do a little bit of everything. He's 230 pounds. He can catch, really efficient as both a rusher and receiver. The downside with him is that he was always a committee back. Well, he's probably going to be always a committee back in New England, but this is a team that is now going to have a lot more value for the running backs than we saw last year when they move to Mac Jones, which will be at some point this year and certainly going forward into 2022. This is going to be a backfield that we're going to be more excited about in the future. And James White is going to be out of there probably after this year. There's not a ton ahead of him in Damian Harris as a rusher. So there's multiple paths for him to get touches. I don't think he's ever going to be a workhorse. I think he's always going to be part of a committee, but getting a, you know, a chance to draft him cheaply, I think he's going to be one of the biggest values in this year's class, because he's a pretty solid running back prospect, decent draft capital, fourth round, and a sneaky, awesome landing spot.
Yeah, I think you said it all. I'm pretty pumped. I just got him in like end of round 17 of a startup that like finished, that is still drafting. Like, so I was able to catch him before anybody else did. And I see it very similarly to you. Let's round out the second round and then maybe do a part two. What do you think about that? Yeah. Because we're at about an hour. I'm very curious. So rounding out the second round of Superflex tight end premium, you have Kadarius Toney, Dwayne Eskridge, Kenneth Gainwell, Josh Palmer. Very interesting your takes on Palmer and Eskridge, because these are guys that right away, like just from a non-dynasty perspective, are like the round 16 to 18 best ball darts that I think are pretty interesting, like tied to a premium quarterback to make a stack. Both seem like they're pretty big play guys. You noted like PFF really likes Palmer, who is a downfield guy. As you put, he's a high A-dot wide receiver. I know they noted that as quarterback in college, I'm not into college much, is like just really, really bad. And they were, I think, accounting for that and thinking he was underrated on that. And then Eskridge, it's like, you talk about lack of competition for like Russ's wide receiver three. It's what, Penny Swain, Ursua?
Yeah, Freddie Swain. Like, yeah. That. Yeah. Or so, oh, yeah.
I combined Freddie Swain and Penny Hart into Penny Swain.
Penny Swain. Yeah, I mean, he's going to beat out Penny Swain. There's no question. But, I mean, the other thing with Eskridge, awesome kick returner. So, going to be active on game day. You don't take a guy in the second round who's an awesome kick returner and not have him return kicks. And they talked about how they partly drafted him, or maybe fully drafted him, because of his special teams ability. So, he's going to be active. If he's active, he's probably going to be no worse than the wide receiver four. He's probably getting a few routes in every game. Maybe he works into the wide receiver role pretty quickly. And he was pretty efficient in yards per route run throughout his career in college. And that's, I'm done saying good things because everything else was terrible. He's 24 years old. I'm not really excited about Dwayne Eskridge, but everything after Kadarius Toney in my ranks is kind of a pick your poison home run shot type of move. Like, I don't have any problem with whoever you want to take after Kadarius Toney. I think that the class kind of falls off a cliff a little bit, where we have guys who I really like their profiles coming in, land in terrible spots, or usually with terrible draft capital, and then guys who I was not really considering draftable coming in, landing in really good spots with good draft capital, like Kadarius Toney and Dwayne Eskridge. So it's kind of like you're, not that I didn't consider Toney draftable, but terrible prospect to be drafted in the first round. So yeah, I think you do want to, at this point, start to really consider the situation, because the guys that we like are in such bad spots, and the NFL doesn't clearly think that much of them, that the situation now becomes a much bigger factor, because our hit rate is going to be pretty low in this range to begin with. And so if you can get any kind of production from these guys right away, that gives you a sell window. And we're probably going to have a better idea of who's going to be able to get on the field than, you know, if they're actually good. And getting on the field is going to make a huge difference. So Josh Palmer, you know, he's in a situation now where Jalen Guyton was running a full slate of routes on the outside, but doing nothing with those routes, not getting any targets, but he was just extremely high ADOT. I mean, you'd see him with like 17, 18, his ADOT on a weekly basis would be like 21. I mean, you know, on multiple targets that, you know, he's getting used in a very specific role. Now they do change their offensive coordinator. It's not a lock that they're going to have someone in that kind of full-time clear out role. But if they do, you know, and Herbert operated pretty well with someone in that role, Josh Palmer is kind of the obvious guy to replace Guyton. And I think he could replace Guyton pretty quickly. Guyton was a UDFA who hasn't done anything. So Palmer, you know, I don't know if he's any good, but PFF seems to think that his college situation was such garbage that it really doesn't provide us with much information. In terms of, you know, the usual production that we want to look at, he gets pretty decent draft capital and he's playing with Justin Herbert. So I like that. And then I got Kenneth Gainwell slotted in here between the two. Really awful, awful draft day for Gainwell, who I legitimately thought could be a second round pick, goes in the fifth round, lands in a spot where he's a pass catcher with a mobile quarterback. There's another pass catcher on the roster in Boston Scott who I think can play. And Miles Sanders can catch a little bit too, although he's pretty bad at that last year. He's good at it as a rookie. So really bad landing spot for Gainwell. But, God, he's so good in yards per route run. He's such a interesting kind of hybrid wide receiver running back guy who clearly will play running back at the NFL level but has that wide receiver ability out of the backfield. It's just like hard for me to completely bury him and put him behind like the Kyle Trask, Davis Mills guys that I have after these wide receivers. Where is there any hope for Gainwell, Mike?
I think there's some hope. You know, the hope is like if he passes Boston Scott, which I guess that like that's the tough hurdle. But like if he can clear that hurdle, like that's a spot that we thought had value last year. You know, it's kind of remains to be seen how much value it's going to have with Jalen Hurts at the helm. But, you know, Boston Scott was one of my favorite zero RB targets last season in rounds 11, 12 or whatever. So Like I've been drafting Gainwell on some of these early best balls since the draft in round 16 or whatever. Like if he drops there, I think he's worth a flyer. I think some people are taking him too early. I've seen some weird takes about people. Not that I'm like crazy high on Miles Sanders, but people are like, oh, Miles Sanders better watch out now. And I'm like, I like Gainwell too, but it was the fifth round.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. It's funny. I've seen a wide range of takes on this situation. I think that just goes back to the fact that he was a prospect a lot of people liked, but didn't have the good draft capital. And it's like hard for people to wrap their heads around what that means.
Yeah, I do think it's not great for Sanders in the sense that I think Gainwell or Boston Scott is going to have this role now. Like, it's if it was just Boston Scott, maybe Sanders kind of, again, who was bad in the passing game last year, maybe he improves, locks that role up, and is a three-down back. But it's hard for me to see how he's like a true three-down back now with both Gainwell and Scott there. And then you also have Jalen Hurts, so we're going to see less passes to the running back to begin with. So it just sort of cements to me that what I already thought, which is that Sanders is probably going to be more of like a J.K. Dobbins in a less exciting offense with probably a few more carries.
It's tough because the market is scared on Sanders right now, which leaves him as if you're trying to do these like hyper fragile running back builds, he's the guy you're taking in round three or you're going receiver. So definitely some difficult decisions ahead on Miles Sanders.
I did get out on him pre-draft. I traded away Sanders for Gibson. I got, pulling it up, I gave away Sanders in the first, future 2022 first. This is a team that won last year, so I do expect it to be late. And then Gibson, the 210 and the 308 in PPR, you know, just regular PPR. So I felt like a little bit of an overpay at the time, but I'm pretty happy having Gibson, you know, survive the draft with really nothing added. And then Sanders, me feeling a little bit more shaky on him.
Yeah, so I think we can close it out there. Next episode, we'll hit on like round 3-4 targets, and that's where you start to get in Superflex tight end premium some of your dart throws at quarterback, tight end. I'm interested to hear your take on Trask and Mills. So we'll hit that in the next episode.